Welcome.
Hi guys, my name's Emma. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Hi, you guys are so wonderful, so hospitable. It's so good to be here. Thank you, Sam, for having me. I know you guys have had a lot of speakers from my home group. We have some really strong members of AA up there, so we'll see how we measure up. But took a while to pray in the car before getting up here, so whatever I say at this point is not my responsibility. You can talk to God about it. I love what Sam just read. You guys are asking me to fully disclose myself. I asked God to help me to be honest. And honestly, that's not something that I'm hardwired to do. I'm hardwired to be a liar, to be completely deceitful, to have everybody have a different piece of me, be that true or false, just a different little piece of me, but never anybody know the full Emma. I've lived that way my entire life. I mean, as far back as I can remember, like before I started drinking, like when I picked up my first drink, alcoholism came very, very, very easily to me. Everything that came with it, the lying, the cheating, and the stealing, seemed like I was born with the natural ability to do that stuff. I've been sober since April 3rd of 2015. I have a sponsor who knows she's my sponsor, who I talk to regularly, who I share my inventory with, who's taken me through the 12 steps, who knows when I'm lying or when I'm not telling her the full truth, and I'm so grateful for that. And I have the privilege of sponsoring other women in this program, one of whom got to come with me tonight, and I'm really, really grateful for that, because otherwise I would have spent my entire hour and a half drive thinking. Just thinking. You guys know what I mean by that. My head still is can be a really dark, scary place, and like I am fully convinced still today that my head, if left to its own devices, will absolutely kill me. Absolutely. So, a lot of alcoholics, you hear them talk from the podium, and they'll share about their first drink and how vividly they remember it. And I don't remember my first drink. And early on, trying to get sober, I am not a first nighter by any stretch of the imagination. And for a long time, prior to my current sobriety date, and even in this sobriety, like, I struggled with that. You know, am I not an alcoholic because I don't remember my first drink? You know, and the reality is I absolutely have alcoholism. I have the spiritual malady. I have the phenomenon of craving. I have all of that, and I'll tell you guys a little bit about that. And a part of my alcoholism incessantly tries to get me to compare out, to see where I'm different from everybody. And that was just kind of one piece of fuel that I used. But prior to my first drink, was absolutely restless, irritable, and discontent, and I would not have used those words at all. I think I used to tell my parents that I had, like, tummy aches, because I didn't know how else to describe just this, like, deep discomfort and this deep anxiety. I would call them tummy aches, and I'm talking, like, 5-6 years old, and they were like, you know, we don't know what to tell you. They took me to doctors because they thought I had, like, actual stomach issues. But it was just, like, I was so scared. Like, I'm absolutely a person that is, like, naturally riddled with fear, which is why I feel like I have to lie to everybody, because I'm scared that I'll never be good enough. I'm scared that you won't like me. I'm scared that you'll think I'm this or that I'm that, or that you'll know the real me, or that you'll know what goes on in my head, or any of that stuff. And so I just lie. When I was in first grade, 9/11 happened. I'm 23. I'm young. I got sober when I was 20, right after my 20th birthday. So 9/11 happened, and for no good reason at all, I decided to tell all my classmates and my teacher that I had an aunt who died in 9/11, which was just not true. There was no truth. And that's just, like, one example of the insane lies I told people. I could not be me. I could not be Emma. I had to be somebody else. I had to be more than I was. So fast forward, I started drinking, and drugs were a big part of my story too. When I was about 13, 14, and it was, I found my place. Like, I really did. I arrived, I fell in love. I mean, everything you hear, I felt it was, I came home. Like, that's what it felt like. Like, I was finally home after, like, desperately searching for years and years and years. Middle school was a terrible, terrible, terrible time for me. My alcoholism progressed very, 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 very quickly. I went into high school having smoked some pot, drank a few times, but still had good grades. Loved sports, was a huge athlete, captain of my soccer team going into my freshman year, playing varsity volleyball, or junior varsity, but not the freshman team. Sports were a huge part of my life. My relationship with my family had already started to go downhill, but from the outside looking in, like, things were still held together, and you know, I'm not the kind of person that can maintain any semblance of normalcy in life when I'm drinking. Okay, I know people who have graduated college and, you know, had careers and had families, and I couldn't make it past ninth grade. And that does not make me any more or less alcoholic than any of them. Absolutely not. But that was just how my alcoholism manifested. And halfway through my freshman year of high school, I was kicked out. I had completely quit all sports. I stopped going to school. Drugs and alcohol completely ran every single aspect of my life. I terrorized my family. I have two younger sisters, and I caused them more harm than, you know, sometimes I feel like I know how to make right. They saw things that nobody should have to see, and especially not, you know, they were 10 and 12 at the time. And my parents too. I mean, I was a tornado roaring through everybody's life. And if you came in the way of me getting my solution, because that's what that was for me, that's what made me feel okay. That's what leveled me out. That's what made me feel like I was one of you. That's what made me not so tightly wound and live with this, like, horrible, horrible discomfort all the time. If you got in the way of that, I did whatever I had to get rid of you and whatever that meant. So I lost everything a 15-year-old has at 15. My family was terrified of me. They had sent me already to a couple psych wards, lots of therapists, put me on a lot of medication, just trying to figure out what was wrong with me. And like, any sense of self-worth, self-respect, dignity, anything, I mean, that was like long, long, long gone. At 15 years old, I like distinctly remember seeing my life, and having like the clear thought on several occasions, like, I would be happy if I could go prostitute myself on the street and get whatever I wanted with that money and do whatever I wanted. Like, that was what I wanted for me. I'm a terrible judge of what's best for me. But that just, I mean, it sounded like the life. Like, I didn't have to answer to anybody. There was nobody, like, expecting anything of me. You know, I could get what I needed and you know, not worry about the rest. And I have two parents that absolutely loved me, that raised me with everything I could ever have needed. And they saw this happening, and they tried to help me, and they sent me to rehab when I was 15, and when they told me, I had to wait for like a bed to open up, and I remember going home that night and going out on my back porch and lighting up a cigarette and having the thought that I would be removed from drugs and alcohol for the next month or two. And that in and of itself was means enough for me to take my own life, to try to. And I tried, and my dad found me and had to carry me out in front of my mom and my sisters and back to the hospital, and that kind of set the course of the next 2.5 years. It was, I was going to say in and out, but I wasn't out ever. I was in a lot of different institutions, just kind of being transported from one place to another all over the United States. And that's where I was introduced to you guys. I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 15, up in Northern Virginia. It was the first rehab that I went to, and I wasn't one of you. I didn't have what you have. I was too young. I hadn't done this or that. I mean, really at that point, like, alcohol was still doing everything that it needed to do for me. I mean, the consequences were nothing compared to the effect that alcohol had on me. I was absolutely willing to take that beating as many times as you needed me to. And so I sat in your chairs and I didn't hear much. You know, I can say, like, I probably went to hundreds of meetings in those 2.5 years. And I could not have told you what the 12 steps were, not the traditions, not how it works, not the preamble, not the serenity prayer. I mean, nothing. I mean, it was a good excuse to get off campus and breathe in secondhand smoke and drink your coffee and leave. I didn't want what you guys had. I wasn't one of you. But I fully believe that the seed was planted. And I don't know if I would be here today were it not for that time in my life. I lied and manipulated my way through all these treatment centers. Gained a lot of self-knowledge, which I thought would avail me the ability to drink like a normal person, drink like a lady. I have never to this day drank like a lady. I was like a 40s and boxed wine kind of girl, in the woods or in some sketchy basement. And I get out of these places and, made a resolve to stay sober for 6 months just to kind of appease my parents. And I didn't make it more than 5 days. I wasn't planning it. In fact, I was really, truly planning to not drink for 6 months. And I thought I could. I didn't think it would be a problem. Keep my parents off my back until I turn 18 and go to college, and then I can do what I want. And I didn't make it 5 days. And after those 5 days, my first opportunity to drink arose. And there was no question, there was no second thought, there was no like, well, maybe this, maybe that, but I'm getting, my parents are pulling hair out of my head to drug test me because they don't trust me any other way. Nothing. I was done, and I blacked out, and I had to drive my whole family home from the beach at 5 a.m. the next morning. Definitely still drunk. Had just barely got my license, if I even have it. I might have just had my permit. No regard for any of that. And I get envious of speakers who share these like wild, crazy, funny drinking stories from the podium, because I don't have many, if any. My drinking was like really sad and dark, and just kind of gross. I think the coolest one I have is I was blacked out and jumped off a balcony because I thought I could fly or something. Just sad. I walked away with no scratches, luckily, but I went off to college, and something happened that year that is notable to talk about. And at some point that year, my drinking went from something that I felt like I had the choice in, and that I felt like I would have people ask me all the time, like, why are you the way you are? Why do you do this? Why do you party all the time? Why do you do all this? And my honest response to that was like, if I wanted to stop, I could. I just don't want to. Like, why would I? And at some point that year, things shifted. And I no longer had the choice. I began drinking to live. I was waking up. I kept a box of Franzia, boxed wine under my bed, and I would wake up and hit the bag, because I don't know, I would just like wake up with this impending sense of doom every morning. I would get in these like panic attacks and stuff, like dry heaving sober. I mean, this is me sober. Like, that's my problem. Like, my problem is me sober, like left to my own devices. I am like, I make my life so uncomfortable that I don't have a choice but to drink. And that, I mean, that just continued and got worse and got darker. And you know, I completely failed out of college. I don't remember much of that year. Wasted a lot of my family's money, and I came home and any of the lines that I had left uncrossed were far beyond crossed, without a second thought. I mean, at all. You know, I always thought like I changed my mind. Like, I just changed my mind. Like, things were different. Things changed. I changed my mind. And I see now that that's powerlessness. That's the powerlessness of alcoholism. And a short while later, you know, living the way that I was living and doing the things that I was doing with the people I was doing, you don't stay out of trouble for very long. Then I ended up getting in pretty significant trouble with the law, and I remember sitting in a jail cell one night, starting to sober up a little bit. It was probably 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and for the first time, and for a very, 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 very brief period, I saw my life for what it was, and where it was going, and I have never been more terrified in my life. Just this like deep rooted intense like fear of like, I don't know what to do. I can't keep living this way. But like immediately following that was like, this is just the hand I was dealt. This is just me. This is what I was given. This is like the life I'm supposed to live. This is who I am and how it's supposed to be. And my lovely parents bailed me out of jail and said that I would have to start going back to AA in order to live with them. And I was not happy about it. I'm so grateful for it now, but I was so not happy about it. I had a lot of resentments and judgments against Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought that you guys all just came here to talk about drinking. And, you know, in my head, I'm like, well, how is that going to help? Talk about drinking all the time. I'm just going to want to drink all the time. So you can see I really paid attention in those 2.5 years of going to meetings. And I really, I mean, for the first time, like, I was like, I'm done. I am absolutely done. I mean, I walked out of jail and I was like, no more. I'm absolutely done. And 4 days later, I changed my mind again. First, you know, I was going to meetings. This girl was coming from Burke, Virginia, Burke to Arlington, and taking me to meetings back in, like, the Springfield area, which, if you've been in Northern Virginia, that's, like, 30 minutes and then another 25 minutes back and then 30 minutes back to my house. And then I would have her drop me off at, like, my old, you know, drinking friends' houses or the bar or the, you know, the drug dealer's house or anything like that. And, like, no regard for this girl's sobriety. She was 3 months sober at the time, which to me, she was like the queen of AA. 3 months was a long time. You know, but no regard for how that could have affected her sobriety at all. Much later on, made amends for that. And the first opportunity I had, I mean, I remember going to this house and they were all drinking, and they had my favorite drink, Steel Reserve 40-ounce malt liquor, and I just remember, like, staring at the bottle. I mean, I can, like, feel this, like, viscerally right now, still today, staring at that bottle and knowing, like, what they were tasting, what they were feeling, and, like, needing that, like, not wanting it, not wishing I could have it, like, I need that. And I grabbed one and I picked it up and I just started chugging, and that night was terrible. And for the next 8 or 9 months, that was in September of 2014, and my sobriety date is April of 2015. And so during that stretch, however long that is, you know, I was coming to meetings, leaving and drinking, coming to meetings drunk, lying about sobriety dates, lying about being sober. I just like could not get this thing, and all the legal stuff. I had a bunch of backup time, and so my life and was like riding on a lot. I couldn't drink, if I wanted to stay like a free person. But like that stuff like can't stop me. That stuff like cannot get in the way of me in a drink as badly as I wanted it to. I mean, I was scared. I was absolutely scared. I did not want to go to jail. And I ended up getting a sponsor solely because I was sick of people asking me if I had a sponsor. You should get one. I was so sick of it. So I got a sponsor, and I've witnessed a lot of different sponsorship styles throughout my sobriety. Just talking to other people, sponsoring people myself. I've had, since that sponsor, I switched to another sponsor. And I'm so grateful that this woman left me with enough rope to hang myself. She kept a distance. She was absolutely there with a solution and with her experience when I wanted it and when I asked for it. But she let me do what I was going to do, and I'm really grateful for that today. I think it has made me uniquely useful to a lot of women in AA. And so, eventually I get a sobriety date. February 12th, I want to say. February 12th was my first like real sobriety date, and I pulled together 45 days sober, and I was on fire. I thought I was on fire for AA. The reality was I wasn't doing anything for AA but hanging out with other young new people. But I was on fire for it. It was the first time I had felt any kind of sense of camaraderie in a long time, and it was exciting, and it was new, and it was like sober young people just like me, and we did a lot of crazy stuff. And I was going up on this trip to Boston where I had originally been in college to visit some friends, and I had a foolproof plan to stay sober. I was absolutely going to stay sober. There was no doubt in my mind. And I was 45 days sober, which was so long. I could not make it more than 3 days up until that point. And I get to Boston, and all my friends know I'm sober, so they're going to keep me sober. And I was messed up within 2 hours. Again, like, I'm powerless. I don't have an off button. I don't have a no button. and I was devastated. And, like, okay, just tonight. Like, tomorrow is going to be a new day. And I woke up with, like, just that guilt and remorse and shame. Like, how did he do that? And, like, the best way to cure that is to do it again. And I went on a pretty heavy bender for the next 3 or 4 days. And ended up coming home early and was... had to pick up another 24-hour trip, and I was just like so beat up, so beaten down and broken. And 2 days later, I went on vacation with my family in the beach house we were staying in. There was like 2 cans of Coors Light in some cabinet somewhere in the basement that I happened to find, and I changed my mind again. And I lied about that for 16 months into my sobriety. I didn't tell anybody about that. I didn't pick up a new chip. It was I lied about my sobriety date by 9 days. And there was a woman who had, I heard share and speak a lot up at Midtown, who would always talk about lying about her sobriety date and how it almost caused her to drink, and then she got honest. And every time she would speak, I would get sick to my stomach. I mean, I left the meeting one time when she was saying that stuff because, like, it was eating me up, but I really was about to take that to the grave. And at 16 months sober, my sponsor and I like to do kind of a yearly house cleaning. And I was doing a fifth step with her, and I didn't write it down, but I had, like, a bit of willingness to tell her. And I was like, all right, if I'm still willing when I'm there, then it's God's will. And I ended up telling her, and she laughed at me. still grateful for that. I mean, it was 9 days. And I always like to say that at meetings, wherever I speak, because I don't know that I would have ever gotten honest about that were it not for that other woman. I was honest from the podium about her sobriety date and lying about it too. And so if you're in here and you're lying about your sobriety date, I'm sorry, you're so uncomfortable right now. You know, I wish I could say I was one of these people that came to AA and bought into everything you guys were doing here. My friend Rachel, who came out and spoke and I think sent me here, you know, she's somebody who came to AA so fired up and was so ready and so broken and ready to do everything you guys were doing here. And I remember before, she's one of my closest friends. I absolutely love her, but before we were friends, I could not stand her. I didn't relate. I don't relate to that experience. I came into AA absolutely broken, no doubt about that, but with a lot of ideas about what was going to fix me. And I took it upon myself to implement those ideas until it was about to kill me. I think I know what's best for me. I think I know what's going to fix me, and I'm like a bug to a lantern when it comes to like quick fix solutions and things that make me feel good right away and instant gratification. I mean, anything that makes me feel good right now, I'm there without a second thought. And I spent, the better part of my first year sober, testing that stuff out, trying to prove you guys wrong. Trying to look good in meetings, say the right things, and then leave and recreate my drunk life sober. The problem is there's a reason it was called my drunk life. Because when I act that way, when I take these actions completely sober, when I lie to people, when I use people, living in deep, deep, deep selfishness and self-centeredness, that restless and irritability and discontentment comes back full force, and my only option at that point again is to drink. And I got to that place. I was about 9 months sober, and I was at work, and one of these big lies that I had been feeding to the people closest to me, my bubble popped, and I was exposed, or whatever you want to call it, and I was at work and made the decision that I was going to leave work, I was going to get as wasted as I possibly could, and then I was going to take my life. That's where I go. Like, that's where I go with my alcoholism. I go straight to, like, I cannot be on this earth anymore. It's like a common theme throughout my drinking and parts of my sobriety. And I was ready. Even the thought of it was like relieving to me. I don't know if you guys relate to that, but like when I was drinking, like the thought of knowing that I was going to have this stuff in my hands, or even having it and not having, not being physically drunk at the time, like put me at ease. And that's how I felt in that moment at work with this plan. And the only prayer that I had ever said up until that point, and I used it fairly frequently, but kind of, tongue in cheek, and my sponsor at the time, would tell me, like, "Thy will not mine be done." She would have me say that all the time, "Thy will not mine be done," and I don't even think I knew what it meant. But I left work, and I got in my car, and I said, "God, thy will not mine be done," kind of sarcastically, and I ended up at my sponsor's house. I really felt like I was on autopilot. I drove to my sponsor's house, and I told her everything. I mean, everything that I was holding on to. All of the lies. I got honest about everything. And from there, like, I was really able to get sober. Things were not, like, perfect. I was by no means, like, Miss AA after that. It took a long time to start living differently. Practicing a third step. We were just talking about this in the car. Practicing a third step for me initially, turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him for a little while there, and still sometimes today, looks like me doing a lot of things I don't want to do and not doing a lot of things I want to do. I treated it for a long time, and this kind of goes into step 6 and 7 a little bit, and I'll try to organize this as best I can, but kind of just sit on my hands. for a long time. I'm like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And then I would do it because, like, not only am I powerless over alcohol, but I'm powerless over anything that makes me feel really, really good. And I was willing at that point to start involving God in all this. Involving a God that I had no idea about, that I had absolutely no experience with, that at that point was just this, like, vague, ethereal thing that people talked about, but that I truly believed I couldn't understand it the way that you people did. And it scared me. Like, I heard what you were saying. Like, you have to have a spiritual experience in order to recover. You have to find God. Like, God is your solution. You have a spiritual malady. You have to have a spiritual solution. And that stuff scared me. And I didn't know how to do it. It was not right. I mean, my mom is Jewish. My dad's Catholic. And so religion wasn't really a thing in my family. There was no talk of God. But I took the actions. I did what was suggested of me as best I could. And I prayed when I didn't know what or who I was praying to, and when I felt like I was talking to the floor or talking to a wall and so uncomfortable and resentful at points because I didn't feel God. But I kept doing it. I kept taking the actions, and I kept trying to do the things that I didn't want to do and not doing the things that I wanted to do. And that included writing my first fourth step. And, you know, a lot of people talk about the fourth step being this profound experience for them. And so I walked into that with a lot of expectations. And I read my first fifth step to my sponsor, and I felt nothing but kind of cruddy about myself. And I like to say that because I think, you know, having sponsored some women going and taking them through fourth and fifth steps, you know, a lot of us kind of have the expectation that this is going to be the be-all, end-all, fix-me thing. And the reality is, like, it is important. It is so important. I would not be sober without having done a fourth and fifth step, without having one person know every single part of me, without being able to see me on paper, see my character defects, see the person that I am, see the reason that I think that the world is out to get me, and that reason being me. So, so, so crucial. I did a sixth and seventh step. My sponsor and I read in the book. I took my hour after my fifth step. And I started saying the seventh step prayer every day. And for a while there, I think these prayers were sort of very empty. Year two for me, I'd been through the rest of the steps. I had written my eighth step. I had started to make a bunch of amends. I had started trying to implement daily prayer and meditation practices and experimenting with that a little bit, but was still a little bit weirded out by this God thing. Still didn't really know what it was or how to use it or what's my will and what's God's will. And I was confused. I was, like, so confused about all of this. And I also didn't understand it, and I would say this stuff to my sponsor, and she would be like, go to the meeting, go help a newcomer, why don't you reach out to a newcomer, get a newcomer's number and call her the next day, why don't you pick up some service, why don't you, you know, talk to these women with time, all this stuff. And I'm like, how is this going to get me with God? I didn't get it. I did not understand it. And, like, I know the answer to that today. The reality is, it's like, God's always been there, right? I believe that. My God has always been there. I mean, I should be dead today. Absolutely, I should be dead. And I have built up all of this stuff, this ego, these fears, all of these character defects that are getting in the way of this conscious contact with a power greater than me. And my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous has me do all this stuff to try to clear all that away. So that, you know, I can live in service to God, and God can help me be the woman that He would like me to be. So I started going through the amends process. And my drinking, I hurt a smaller amount of people in a really big way. Right? I didn't have, like, a really long eighth step. There was, namely, like, my immediate family. I mean, they caught the brunt of it. I was really young, and they absolutely caught the brunt of it more than anybody. And my sponsor was very, very, very adamant on the fact that I had to be a different person before I was to make these amends. I had to live differently. Otherwise, they'd just be like every other apology I've ever made in the past. Empty words, empty words. You know, my parents knew it. You know, my sisters knew it. They were like, okay, I mean, we're hearing this again, but what's going to change? What's going to change? And so I had to start living differently at home. I had to start taking this stuff that you guys had been teaching me in AA, and that, you know, I could put on a really good face at the AA meeting, do all the service, and help all the newcomers, but I had to take that stuff home with me. I had to implement that in my household. I had to be helpful. I was living with my parents. I had to be helpful to my parents. I had to start cleaning up after myself and helping them around the house, and stop stealing my sister's stuff, and trying to be nice to them, and trying to talk to them, and make time for all of them. And so I was able to make amends with my parents, earlier on. And you know, the truth, which I don't like to admit, is it took me a long time to my sponsor gave me the go ahead to make amends with my sisters. I mean, I was still very, very selfish in those relationships well into sobriety. I just, like, had no regard for, like, their personal space. I was constantly stealing their stuff and didn't understand why it was such a big deal. But if somebody came into my personal space and invaded my privacy, it was a big deal. But I was able to make amends with them both this year, beginning of this year. One of them in January and the other in February. And God is. God is. I am so, so, so grateful. One of my sisters, I need to see here. And jury's still out on that one, but she calls me. She calls me all the time. To talk to me. She won't talk to anybody else. She won't talk to my parents. She won't talk to my other sister. But she talks to me about what's going on. And she trusts me. And she asks me for help. And she asks me what to do. And I'm going to visit her next weekend. She lives in North Carolina. And she's, like, so excited. Like, so excited. She's been texting me every day, like, you know, let's do this, and let's do this, and let's do this. And, I mean, that is not me. Like, I am not the sister that shows up, that is helpful or loving or a good listener at all. Like, at all. I'm so grateful. So grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and for the amends process, and for the relationship that, you know, God's allowed me to have with her, because I know from the bottom of my heart that if she ever got to a place where she wanted help from you guys, she would know where to go, and she would know that it worked. And, like, that means more to me than anything. And I know she would be in good hands. So I'm really grateful for that. I'm not finished with all my amends. I kind of took a little hiatus for a few months during the school year last year, and I was sitting, I go to a meeting on Monday nights called Promises, Promises, and it's on the ninth step promises, and I know I need to start making some amends again when I'm sitting there really uncomfortable, and that started to happen, so I've kind of set back out on I'm making these amends with a vigor, and it's been really cool. You know, I've been able to walk with a little bit more peace. I've been able to, like, interact with people and not feel this, like, weird disconnect, you know, like I'm so privy to. You know, it's been an awesome process, and a lot of the promises have absolutely come true for me. I love the nine step promises. I think, and this is my opinion solely, that there should be a little footnote at the bottom that says that all of this is contingent on the maintaining my spiritual program, because that stuff can go away really, really quickly if I'm not maintaining this stuff. And the 11th step, I've had a lot of fun with the 11th step. I remember I had this mind-blowing conversation with my sponsor probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, because I just had such a hard time like committing and staying consistent with an 11th step and staying consistent with practicing like an on awakening in the mornings and thanking God at night and inviting God into my day. And she had me start talking to other people about like what their 11th step looks like what their meditation looks like, what their prayer life looks like. And like since then, like I have loved it. Like I've had so much fun with it. Like my prayer life has changed, and absolutely it has had to grow as my life has gotten bigger. As you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to live a bigger, better life. You know, my God has had to grow. My prayer life has had to change, and it's been like an amazing, amazing, amazing process. And like I have absolutely established a conscious contact with the God of my understanding today. And I don't know what it is, and I don't know where it is, and I don't know how it is, and I'd rather keep it that way. You know, we were talking about this, like, I don't ever want to put a box around God. Then it's not God, you know? God is either everything or therefore else he is nothing. And so I just kind of try to go with it. You know, as soon as I start, like, trying to picture God or picture this thing that I'm talking to in the mornings and throughout the day and at night, like, I try to shut that down and just take action, try to be present and take the action. And I try, you know, I set the intention just about every morning to live today to serve God, to serve God and my fellows. And it wasn't always that way. And truth be told, the reason I do that is because I live in peace like that, you know, and I want to live in peace. I'm so selfish. I still like feeling good, and I know that stuff makes me feel good. But the byproducts of that have been absolutely incredible. When I was in treatment when I was younger, I had a therapist tell me one time that she thought that I was a sociopath. And I responded with some choice words, and hand gestures. But the truth was, when she said that, like, I didn't think she was wrong. Like, I knew that I didn't feel the kind of love for my family, for the people that I was supposed to love, that other people did. I knew that. I knew there was something wrong with me in that way. And I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you guys are teaching me that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my disease. And I start seeing this stuff, and like, that's what it is. That's why I don't, you know, feel love towards people. It's because I don't act love towards people. You know, like, love is an action. Gratitude is an action. All this stuff. And I started to see more and more and more how selfish and self-centered I really, really am. How self-seeking I am. Where my motives are, even when I'm being, like, the sweetest, kindest person in the world. And I started to take action as though I was grateful, as though I loved these people. I started saying yes when girls asked me to sponsor them, and I started answering their phone calls even when I really didn't want to. And without any say in the matter, I started to feel something. I started to, like, feel love for these people. I mean, I really believe, like, my sponsees have taught me how to love. Absolutely. They've taught me how to love my sisters. They've taught me how to love my family. They've taught me how to be in a loving, romantic relationship. You know, I had to show up. I felt like, you know, if I want to be a good AA member, I got to say yes to these girls, and I got to take them through the steps, and I got to do what my sponsor said. It was a feeling of, you know, kind of, not obligation, but like, obligation, like I have to do this stuff, I have to give this stuff back if I want to keep it. I knew that, you know, it's riddled throughout the big book, and my sponsor's telling me this all the time, but I started to want to do it. I was so excited that Abby could come down with me today, and we had an amazing, amazing time in the car, like talking about God, talking about the steps, talking about relationships, blasting music, singing, Like, I get to participate in people's lives today, and, like, care. Like, I mean, I really thought that I was, like, broken beyond repair at one point. Just, like, extra sick. Like, I hear what you guys are saying, and I get it. I relate to a lot of what you say, but I think I'm just, like, extra broken. And something that I've always struggled with is trying to use my alcoholic thinking to fix my alcoholic thinking. Pro tip, it doesn't work. My sponsor, she always says this, and I love it. It's so simple, but it's so true. There's no secrets. There's no secrets here. There's no secret solution. There's no, like, secret book hidden in some, like, trap door in here. There's no secret thing that all the people with over 10 years know, but you don't. But when you get 10 years, you'll know. Like, there's no secret here. It's the same stuff that I was taught when I was a day sober and a month sober and a year sober and 2 years sober. Like, it's the same stuff. Clean house. You make sure my inventory is in check, and where it's not, like, clean it up. Keep track of that stuff. Try to take a nightly inventory. Trust God. Practice a third step. Practice a seventh step. Practice an 11th step. And help others. Practice a 12th step. Try to give back what's been so freely given to me without expecting anything in return. That was something I struggled with for so long. I expected to feel better. You know, I'd call 10 new girls in one day, like, all right, help me feel better, help me feel better, help me feel better, tell me about your problems, tell me about your problems, then I hang up, why don't I feel better, why don't I feel better, why don't I feel better? Because I was expecting things, because it was still self-seeking, it was still selfishly motivated, and so I just keep taking the actions, and really, I mean, my sobriety has just been, I still haven't mastered consistency. I don't know if I ever will. I talk to people with a lot more time than me, and they haven't either. It's certainly gotten a lot better. I'm guessing by the laugh that that means it won't ever get perfect. That's okay. Progress, not perfection. When things start to get good, and I start getting the gifts, and I start feeling good, I don't need to spend 20 minutes praying and meditating this morning. 15 is enough. I've been to 5 meetings this week. I don't need to go to this one, even though I have service there. I'll call her back later. All of these, like, really, like, little things. I start to take credit, like, well, I'm okay. I don't need this stuff. Like, I feel good. And slowly but surely, every single time, I start to get way more uncomfortable. I go to the meeting and feel like, even though I know all of you people, like, can't really talk to you. I feel this distance between us. I feel a distance between me and God. And my sleep isn't as good. I start just getting a lot more insecure and self-centered. And, my great-grand sponsor, Kathleen, says, and it's so true, it's so hard for us alcoholics. The level of peace, I'm not gonna quote this exactly as she says it, but something like the level of peace that I experience, I have complete control over the level of peace that I'm able to experience. Meaning, I can do this stuff as often and as much and as hard as I want to. You know, I can go to 7 meetings a week. I can pray the whole time. I can constantly be trying to reach my hand out and serve others, and I'll get to live really comfortably. You know, but, like, a lot of this stuff, it's not in my nature. Like, I get lazy. I get selfish. Like, these character defects start cropping up and telling me, like, you don't need to do all that. You're fine. Do what you want to do. And it's been a process just not trying to not listen to that stuff. Do the things that I don't want to do. Just like I talked about in the beginning, practice the third step. Do the things that I don't want to do. I get to help other people today. I get to be useful. I get to show up. My life is an absolute direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I said, I was incapable of maintaining any semblance of normalcy or of life. You know, when I was drinking, and I got to go back to school full time. I just got accepted into you know, my top choice university that I'm starting at in the spring. I'm in a beautiful, loving, healthy relationship with a man who's also sober in this program a number of years. We get to pray together and like talk about God, and it's so far from anything I have ever been used to in that department before, but it's amazing. And I have a good life today, and I can forget that, which is why I'm so grateful for opportunities like this. You know, they help me remember where I came from. Honestly, you know, I hope you guys got something out of that, but you know, I think I'll be able to stay sober tonight. So I'm really grateful. Thank you again so much for having me. You guys are wonderful. Thank you.